Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas! And welcome to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's a show that's hosted by me, Kyle Schoenewill, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle.
Here's
Merry
the
Christmas.
Thing. Here's the thing about this podcast that I value so much. Merry Christmas. There are times like the last couple of weeks where things just, I mean, I feel like this is always a busy time of year for everybody because everyone's trying to crank work stuff out before the break, and that, which is
sure.
Funny and paradoxical to me because it's like,
and
the holidays are coming, we have to really amp up.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I feel like I am not the only person listening that has probably had a very hectic week. But the thing that I appreciate about this podcast that maybe a lot of other people that don't have a podcast like this wouldn't know is that this gives me like a guaranteed slot, generally at least once a week, where we will just have some uninterrupted time to hang out, just chat with my good friend Kyle. So this is the best I've been doing all week, just this exact moment.
Is becoming your escape. Wow, your hangout session.
Yeah.
Kind of back to what it originally started as.
Chill.
Right? Yeah.
I know. Right. I just need to get to France again.
Oh, would you go back right now if you could or not? Are those dark days like in your memory or fond memories?
I feel like I have this tendency. We were talking about this last week. I feel like every era winds up becoming a fond memory for me. I'm definitely, someone once told me that people tend to either err on, I guess, in one of two directions, that there are kind of two main temporal fallacies, if you will. One being that you have too much nostalgia for the past, and the other being that you're too optimistic about the future. And
you have both?
I do think I sort of have both as I'm saying it out loud, but I certainly have the first one. Not in a way where I'm not a like, let's go backwards person, but I do tend to have those kind of Andy Bernard moments.
I think you're more the optimistic future guy, more than that, for sure. I agree with that. More than the look back guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I also love how much you've worked in the word temporal on this podcast in the last 2-3 months. Just,
you know, we're living in a post Loki season 2 world.
Yeah. Are you going somewhere for Christmas? I'm going back to Michigan next week. It's always the funny time of the year where I went back for Thanksgiving and then actually I flew out last weekend to visit a friend. And now I'm going back on Wednesday. So it's the 3 times kind of 6 weeks type deal. But it should be good.
Are you going somewhere? We're almost doing the opposite of the holiday approach where we are. I was actually supposed to go back home to my hometown, Louisiana, last weekend for a wedding. And then I couldn't go because I had COVID and could not be at a wedding around all of my grandma's friends that are 80 plus. But Candace is back visiting her family this weekend. I am going to visit a friend in Houston, so not going too far. And then we are kind of just the way things are falling. We have a wedding right after Christmas. And since we have kind of gotten other, like we've done other family visits leading up to it. We're actually doing Christmas just here, just me and Candace and old Samwise. And then right after that, are heading to New Orleans for like a New Year's Eve wedding, which is going to be a crazy.
Oh yeah, you and your weddings. Thing. Forgot about
that.
Yeah,
right.
I'm going to catch you off guard here for a second. You know how we sometimes do those episodes called, I think we call them three other things that are bringing you joy right now. Or you
I know, was we just asked thinking about that the other day. We haven't done one of those in so long.
I know, but I'm going to catch you off guard and ask you to do one thing because I'm going to share one thing from my life randomly right now. Okay. You know how I'm late to the game on so many things?
Sure.
Partially because I reserve room for my things and I'm not an early adopter.
Uh-huh.
So this is not revolutionary, but I am just now starting to go back through the podcast Smartless, which is like least cool thing to say, I guess, because it's already like one of the biggest podcasts in the world and it's like 3 years old. So there's, you know, nothing revolutionary here.
Sure.
But it is significantly adding joy to my life. And I don't really listen to podcasts outside of what we do here. I'm not a podcast guy. And yet, you know, I think when I work on music, like all fall, I've been really busy with music. And so when I spend 8 hours in a studio, like working on keyboard parts and guitar parts and stuff, I get in my car and the first thing I want to do is listen to like talk radio or call somebody because I'm so extroverted, I got to talk. And now that Kirk got injured in football, I have no interest to listen to sports podcasts anymore.
Right.
So I ran out of things to do and I stumbled upon Smartless. It's really amazing. It's amazing. First of all, like the dynamic between the three, and there goes my camera already. Dang it. I knew I was going to have a battery exhausted problem. The dynamic between the three people is so fun because, you know, Jason Bateman has his very much like, hey, oh, here we go, guys. Yeah. You know, that kind of humor, which is perfect. Uh-huh. Will Arnett is just naturally crazy funny, like Lego Batman style, just ridiculous and kind of absurd, but like incredibly cutting with his remarks. And then Sean is just so nice. And he's always the guy trying to ask the question about like their fatherhood or, you know, what got them to what they're doing. And then Will just crushes him. And it's really funny to me. So I've just been going through, finding the guests I like. So I've listened to Robert Downey Jr. I'm listening to a Stephen Curry episode right now. Will Ferrell, Jerry Seinfeld, and just kind of, they're really good at taking on the vibe of the guest, Zach Galifianakis. And it's bringing me a lot of joy. There have been a couple times that I've been traveling in the airport and I am like tearing up. I'm laughing so hard to myself, trying not to have everyone look at what is this weirdo laughing at, but there's just some funny stuff on there. So,
I love that.
Smartless is adding joy to my life. How about you?
I have one that I thought of as soon as you asked me that will be my main one, but just as a connector, because you mentioned Robert Downey Jr.
Sure.
This, you know about this. Candace and I have been over the last few years trying to add some like non-traditional Christmas movies into the rotation, just because it's like, we've been great this year about throwing on like Home Alone and Elf and Love Actually and all the ones that we generally love.
Classics.
But we've also been, you know, The Green Knight, one of the big points of contention here in this podcast, but not what I'm going to talk about. But the other one that I think I watched for the first time last year, and I'm sure I brought it up on the podcast, but we watched again this year, that I want to mention just because it is timely, is Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is the Robert Downey Jr. movie written and directed by Shane Black.
Right.
Or co-written, I think, and directed by Shane Black.
Mm-hmm.
And
It's
really fun. I think you'd like it. I mean, it's crass, but like...
Oh, I'd love it then.
But it's crazy. Like I only say that to say that I know that we have folks that listen that have kids. And so it is not that kind of movie that you would put on, you know, when you're like decorating the tree and your three-year-old is waddling around. But I think that it's also not like...
Three-year-olds don't waddle. ...horribly
offensive.
Okay.
anyway, so I think people should check it out because as I was watching it this last time, I mean, it's so similar to Iron Man 3. It's crazy. Like some of the same, it's almost, I mean, this had to be what happened, is that they had so much fun making this movie that whenever they had the opportunity to team up again for Iron Man 3, they wanted to basically take that template and then put it into the MCU, which I think is one of the things that I've always loved about the MCU, is that it gives directors and creators in general the chance to just kind of play in that sandbox, but bring in their own style.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's fun in that way. But even if you're not someone that loves Iron Man 3, it's also just really fun because it's just an RDJ showcase in a way that feels as much like Tony Stark as any role that I've ever seen him play, to the point where I looked at Candace while I was watching it this last time and I was like, Jon Favreau had to watch this and say, because it came out in like 2005, and say like, this is it. Like, this is the... I mean, obviously, he was known prior to that as being just an insane acting talent. And I think the only thing that had ever held RDJ's career back prior to that had been his struggle with addiction and his issues with the law. But I think everyone knew he was super talented. But if you watch this movie, it's like the exact kind of like the charisma he brings to it. It's really bantery in a way that feels like what they were trying to channel in even the first Iron Man film. It's just the kind of like what you and I talk about, the like over talking thing
mm-hmm.
that he and Pepper do. Mm-hmm. In those first films especially. So it's just, it's really fun. If you just feel like you want some more like Tony Stark-esque RDJ in your life, and it's a Christmas movie. So that is, was going to be my like, my quick aside. And now I feel like I shouldn't say my other thing that's bringing me joy, because that took too long.
Well, why don't you just say it in 10 seconds? It's a challenge to you. Go,
okay,
10 seconds. Here we go. One.
Station 11 on HBO or on Max. Is the best show I've seen in a long time. Candace and I like plowed through it really quickly. Eight, insanely good. Nine, everyone should go watch it.
10. Wow. 10 seconds. All right. So a couple more things here before we dive into Hawkeye, which I'm stoked on given the time of year. But we dropped 4 brand new merchandise items this last week.
All right.
And we are so grateful for the people who have already jumped in and bought some merch. I have an entire setup just right here that I'm shipping out merch. I've been doing it the last 2 days. That's going to tie into my next point. But man, we're so grateful for all of you. This is really generally a listener-supported podcast, and buying merch is one of the ways you can do that. Yes, there are ads in some episodes. We make some money from that. But for the most part, it's because of you guys that we can do this stuff. So we would never put out merch in the first place that we didn't already think was super cool. That was one of mm-hmm. the things you and I said before we made anything ever. If we wouldn't wear it, a la this shirt I'm wearing right now, then don't make it. And I think these 4 items still fit that rule, which is that they're incredibly comfortable, they're incredibly cool, and I would wear them myself. And I tried to, not to all the time, but I do wear a lot of them. In fact, I bought one of our own mugs. So I'm really proud of these 4 items. I just want to tell you really briefly kind of the situation. They're 4 different things that are kind of have different timelines. First of all, we have a few tumblers. Look at this right here in the camera.
Nice.
A 30-ounce matte Flag Red Friends From Work tumbler. Now 30 ounce, I didn't realize how big it is. Like, this is the new thing. Like, this is like, you're going to fit a ton of cold drink in here as well, if you don't want hot drink, but keeps everything warm and cold. It's incredibly durable. And this logo looks really cool. I don't know if you can see this on the camera, but basically it just leaves some parts unengraved, and that's the background. That's cool. Yeah, it looks really cool.
Hey, I was recently told that, I always heard 8 ounce glasses of water a day. Someone the other day told me that you should be aiming closer to like 100 ounces of water. So you got to start expanding that container size, man.
That's right. 3 of these then a day.
3 of those.
So these are $30, and I have them right now in front of me. If you get your order in before Wednesday, December 20th, I can ship these to you and they will make it to you before Christmas. So this item in particular will make a great Christmas gift, okay? Item number 2, which I don't have in front of me, I have some Friends From Work beanies. They're super dope. They're black and it just says FFW on the front, but in the TVA style logo. It's super really cool. Dope. Again, shout out Jacoby for all this, because he just crushed a mm-hmm. whole new batch of artwork. Those I will not be shipping before Christmas, but if you get your order in, you still should be getting those really soon, like early in January. So I can get those shipped, but probably just not in time for Christmas. Those, I believe, don't quote me on this, are $25. All of these items, by the way, directly support you and I, but also mm-hmm. you can find on our website, the ffwpodcast.com, and then you can click on shop or do /shop and you'll see all the items there. I think there's 8 now. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool looking, if I might say so myself. So
I'm definitely ordering a beanie.
Tumblers and beanies. Then our showstopper is we have a limited amount of really comfortable olive green hoodies that have this incredibly dope artwork right in the center, kind of like this, mm-hmm. in, again, that Loki TVA style. It has a little kind of depiction of the branches, if you will, and then Loki's outline. And then my favorite part is on the left, it says friends from work in a cool writing and says, mm-hmm. let's grow this together, which is so fitting for this podcast, for how you and I have viewed this thing from the beginning. Those are $50. It's going to be as comfortable as the Spider-Man hoodie that we did 2 years ago, I believe. Mm-hmm. No. And those will be pre-order right now, and I can probably get them to you again the first couple weeks of January. So that's 3 items. And then the last one, last but not least, we have this incredibly dope black coffee mug that comes in 2 sizes. It has that same logo that's on the hoodie, but laid on black. And on black, it looks incredible. I've already sold a bunch of those. Now, those are print on demand. So if you order them, they will be shipped directly to you. And I have an unlimited amount since that's the case. So those still can make it in time for Christmas, I believe, if you get them in like right now, otherwise just after. And that's either $20 or $25, depending on the size mug you choose. So mug, tumbler, wow. hoodie, beanie. Incredible.
Excellent.
I got to say one other announcement. Sorry. So that's that side of it. But also, if you're a Friends from Work Plus subscriber, I'm talking directly to you because I just shipped hundreds, literally spent 2.5 days watching Daredevil and shipping artwork prints. The incredible art that Jacoby made from this season, season 4 of Friends from Work with Captain Marvel and Miss Minutes and Ant-Man on it, et cetera. You've seen it before. I shipped those to you. And if you're a tier 2 or tier 3 subscriber, I shipped you an extra large print. I think it's like 11 by 17.
Oh,
the ones
right.
that I showed on social media right back here as you walk up my studio that are framed. Super cool.
Yeah.
So
this
I shipped
the first year we've had those to ship
yes,
out, right?
Correct. I've always printed them for myself selfishly, but now we're sharing those with other people. I want to give our Friends from Work Plus people free stuff. You have subscribed, you've supported us so many times. And so now let us give you free stuff. But I can't send you this stuff if I don't have your address. So I know a lot of people have filled in their address on Patreon, which I appreciate. It's gone up by probably 50%. Probably 80% of people on Patreon have their shipping address in there. And so you got one. But if you need the past seasons and or you are a Friends from Work Plus subscriber on Apple, Spotify, or Substack, and you haven't reached out to us via our contact form or hello@theffwpodcast.com, then I don't have your address and I can't ship it to you. And I want to give you free stuff. So this is your last chance, I guess, to reach out to me with what you need and I'll get it to you. I promise. So there's my 2 things. Prints
Love
and
it.
All the merchandise.
There is a lot of sweet stuff coming out of the Friends from Work shop at the moment. Candace and I were just talking about that before I logged on. Which, by the way, speaking of, sorry, this is totally unrelated. But okay. This is this thing that Candace designed recently for her agency that she works with.
That's
How dope
pretty
is
cool.
This?
Yeah, that's right? really cool.
Talk about just, I'm not even trying to sell this. I actually don't even think
people
can
the broads,
buy this,
does it say? But, send in the broads.
Yeah, the broad collective is the... Yeah. The agency, but little Candace designed the little Austin skylight bat light bat.
So the Sconewill Earl family right now are just pumping out a lot of good stuff.
Just pumping it out, yeah.
Okay, so I know that can be a lot. Just know that we are 1, so grateful for all of you who support us. 2, this is a listener support podcast, and we are so grateful for what you can do. If that's just listening and subscribing. Awesome. That's incredible. But if you are interested in taking it a next step further, you can look into things like these merchandise items and or these artwork prints via Friends from Work Plus. Okay, we're going to get into so much Hawkeye goodness after a quick word from these sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm growing really fond of this particular portion of the rewatch. And I don't know if this was intentional from you or unintentional, but the whole sync up with Christmas, watching No Way Home post Loki, Hawkeye now, but then also because over on Friends from Work Plus, we're trying to wrap Daredevil part 3 of season 3. Mm-hmm. I also watched that, which I feel like actually syncs up perfect with not only Christmas, because of the weather going on in that show, and like, you know, it's cold and it's snowing at times, but also syncs up really well with Hawkeye and this entire time of year. So something about the whole thing is really working, and I enjoyed the last, whatever it is, 8 hours of content that I just consumed.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I've realized, and we'll talk about this more, I'm sure, in a second. I think that this is the first time that I have rewatched, or at least closely rewatched, the Hawkeye finale since having rewatched Daredevil. Like, I know that I rewatched Hawkeye at some point whenever I was figuring out the new Phase 4 watch order, but I was just, I don't think that I've had Vincent D'Onofrio's Daredevil performance at least like at the top of my mind in the same way. It's certainly not.
Exactly.
When we watched the first time, certainly not.
100%. I don't know the timeline of this, but had I watched Daredevil before Hawkeye the first time? I think so, right? Because didn't we make sure I was prepped?
I don't think so. No, because I think that was our cue. Whenever Charlie Cox showed up in No Way Home, and I think No Way Home, what came out the week between episode 5 and 6. So we knew Kingpin was now going to be in Hawkeye, but we hadn't actually seen him.
And that's when we were like, okay, Kyle, you got to watch it.
Yeah. And then I don't think any context, because then I remember afterwards you saying, yeah, now I understand some of the like the conversations around the different portrayal and stuff like that.
Okay.
Which I want to talk about more.
But. Well, I think that's a perfect place to start, right? Because that's how we left Hawkeye last time, is talking big picture about some of the parts we felt like were amazing and some of the stuff that was lacking. Since I just shut off the finale of both Daredevil and Hawkeye literally hours ago, let's start there for a second. Because I think for me, in general, I don't really take back some of the criticism of just, I don't love that just the finale, for the most part, has a little bit, not as much as like No Way Home at the beginning, but just a little taste of like this overall goofy Disney Channel type tone. The owl, the LARPers, like the swordsman. In general, I don't like that they took that kind of tone, when really the buildup to that, for the most part, with some of the stuff and the buildup to the terror with Kingpin is so good that I just don't know why they had to make it kind of goofy to end. Maybe they were thinking like this has to stay firmly a Christmas movie, because it feels like it has a little bit of like Christmas movie, almost Hallmark Channel type.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And I don't like that. I wish they had not done that. The reason I wish they had not done that is because I actually feel like so much of the show nails a ton of stuff, actually. Like, it does feel like a little bit of a letdown, just because that's not the direction I would have taken the finale. Even down to like using the Pym Tech to shrink the van, having that be taken off by the owl. Like, I get that they're trying to be funny. Ironically, by the way. Well, hold on. Not ironically. This is what I want to say. But on the other hand, I think there are some things that I was maybe a little misinformed given my Daredevil rewatch. Like, I remember Kingpin as being like 100% like just terrifying in Daredevil season 3. And then in this being totally a pushover and goofy. I don't think it is that way. Did you take a chance to go back and forth? Like the first shot of that entire interview with Maya and stuff in the first scene of the finale, dude, it's almost seamless between Daredevil. Like that is the same Kingpin exactly. He's talking the same. There is still that terror. Like when he goes, and Maya betrayed me. Like that, it's exactly the same. The only difference is he doesn't smash her face in until blood's, you know, shooting out.
Right.
But then even when he's fighting Kate, like, it is kind of the same moves that he uses in the fight in the finale where, like, for the most part, it's like a big bodied man, like body slamming.
He's like throwing his weight around.
Yes. He's throwing his weight around on Point Dexter. And like, he's doing the same thing with Kate.
Yeah. It's the Kevlar suit, which we know he has.
That final battle in the Daredevil 3 finale has a little bit of a goofy tone too, with like how much Point Dexter's trying to throw items and Daredevil's like blocking him. So like, it actually doesn't feel that far away. The only difference is Hawkeye doesn't really go to the length of Daredevil smashing his face until he's covered in blood. That's where Hawkeye stops. But he does dispatch of Kate other than a bomb goes off, a bomb arrow.
And he
throws his weight around in the same kind of way.
I think that the
I guess I'm reading that part back is my point. A little bit.
Yeah. I think people felt it was too cartoony just in how kind of part of it was the costume, honestly, which I think was D'Onofrio's choice.
Since this is the beauty of the new...
Nobody can hear you as you walk away. Nobody can hear you as you walk away from the microphone. Okay, for our listeners, Robbie is walking through his room looking for something. I will keep narrating as he's...
I thought it was right here.
Oh, he doesn't have it. Here we go.
Oh, wait. No, I do.
Here we go.
Okay. This is the exact image that D'Onofrio apparently asked Hawkeye if they could channel via
pull it back
the costume
a tiny bit.
There.
Pull it back a tiny bit. Okay, yeah.
See, it's like the white with the kind of Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah.
It's like that. It's a Mark Waid graphic novel that's pretty well regarded in the Spider-Man canon. I mean, fairly. It's kind of a deep cut, honestly, that he pulled that. But I think that's what I heard. I think it's fun given that. I think that you could argue that also kind of contributes to just the version of him in Daredevil that is this legitimate, like, terrifying top of the entire criminal underworld guy that can also come out to a press conference and like win everybody over versus like him really leaning into the comic booky kingpin thing. I could see turning people off. On the flip side, you know, I that is at some point, if you're going to continue with Kingpin and if you're going to introduce Kingpin to other Marvel properties beyond Daredevil that are going to be inherently more comic booky, then I think it makes sense to sort of have fun with that and not try to like fall into the trap of the early 2000s Marvel films where it's like, we don't want the X-Men to wear yellow because that's too goofy, so they wear black leather instead.
That's a perfect example of what the difference is there. Is it fair for me to say then that both things are kind of true? Like, I slightly wish the tone was different at a few key instances throughout the show, but also that it's maybe not as extreme as maybe originally portrayed.
I think so. I had two thoughts on Kingpin and then kind of one on the finale in general. And then we can kind of move on from my side because I know we've talked... I feel like every time we've talked about Hawkeye, we tend to talk mostly about this portion of the finale. And like you, I want to talk about the
Something
rest
else.
Of the show.
Sure.
But I had a couple of thoughts here. Briefly, there are a few things I would change that I think would have been really easy changes that I think would have improved things.
Yep.
One, and this is so small, but there's something about having these conversations that Kingpin has with Eleanor, with Maya, with Kazi in that like Christmassy lit up, like trust a bro back room that just feels like whenever he's like, people need to remember that this is my city. I'm like, is it though? Cause you're not, I'm looking around and you, you don't seem to be someone that's like on top of the world. You seem to be kind of a low level, like crime figure. I'm just saying it doesn't feel like it's very different than when Fisk is in his like penthouse in Daredevil season one or even Daredevil season three when he's in like the hotel room he's bought where it's just this is clearly a guy with a lot of influence.
Yeah, but that maybe isn't his house. Maybe he just met them there for that exact shot.
I know, but it's just like something about every scene happening there. And this is the only time that we're like almost every scene that we have with Fisk is either in that particular room or in the store with Kate. And it's just like, I do think that the setting matters in terms of the kind of gravitas with the character.
Where my beef more comes from is the fact that he then hired the Trust a Bro gang, the Tracksuit Mafia.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like if you're so on top, how are those your best cronies? Like if you knew that the finale was going to end with Kingpin kind of being behind the entire thing, then I don't think I would have chosen the tracksuits as the main bad guys throughout because they're just too goofy. But I feel like I would have been okay with the tracksuits if Kingpin wasn't the end game. Like if you just want to make this a lighthearted, like Clint can roll his eyes, these guys are so dumb, then that can be really funny too. But then I don't think have him show up in the at the end.
That's exactly right, I think. And that's well put because I think that...
I think in general, if he hadn't showed up, then it would have... We would have had more grace for like Kate like learning her way against the level of villain she was fighting.
Yeah. Well, it's a... It is a poor adaptation of a particularly...
It's an adaptation of the only comic I've ever read. Remember?
Yeah, true. Yeah. Well, and that's like, which is good because you kind of have a sense of how I think in some ways Hawkeye is a fascinating case study for comic adaptations in that way. More so than I think a lot is made of the Jason Aaron Love and Thunder adaptation, and I think we addressed that very thoroughly. But I think that this is kind of more interesting because. You know, Fraction had a pretty large consulting role here in a way that I think goes beyond what Jason Aaron did within Love and Thunder. So I don't think that it's that Matt Fraction's comic was misunderstood. I think that on the one hand, it's such an interesting lesson in what does and does not translate. Because I think the humor in the Fraction comic is so funny to me still that it makes me laugh out loud sometimes. And I think it's just one of those things that you can do on the page and the way that you can control pacing and the way that you can, like, by having an artist that you work with a certain way, like David Aja, you can then control exactly the way that certain things land. And there are just way more variables whenever you have a TV show. With established actors and established continuity outside of that and things that you have to kind of cater to. But even just the basic, like the tracksuit mafia in the comic versus in the show, it's like they're just as goofy, but it feels because every comic kind of feels like its own universe anyway, even within the Marvel universe, you just don't really question. But I think that what's kind of weird about some of that stuff here, including the Kingpin of it all, is having to integrate that with a show that's also dealing with Hawkeye moving on after losing his partner and best friend and all the Avengers in some ways are the Avengers really like as an entity within his life. And it's like, you have a lot of things jockeying and what I'm going to say in a bit is that I think surprisingly, given that a lot of it works really well, I think one of the only like straight poor instances of adaptation is adding the Kingpin in. I think you're right. Like I think I almost would
have preferred... And that's not to say we don't love Kingpin. We love Kingpin and want him in the show.
And I think we said this, you know, to go all the way back. I think that we said this at the time. I'm not as much at the time. I think I was really worried, like, oh, you belittle Kingpin because she beat him so easy. I'm with you. I don't think I feel that way.
I don't think it's that. No.
I think what I'm feeling more is wouldn't it have been better if we basically, like, what if the finale ended on a note more like season five ended to Kingpin, where it's just like, Kingpin? That's the guy that's in charge of all this? That's crazy. But then it gives 100%. You the sense that there are some layers.
And then you're right away like, oh, what about Echo? And what about Daredevil next year? Yes. And like, yes.
It's just, it's strange that we like, and maybe that's the bigger thing.
And then you could have also
setting.
Been like, Hawkeye could have been like, oh, wow, I'm glad he didn't get involved this whole time. Because then it would have been different.
And then it kind of adds to, some foreboding. But I think that it's weird to
me. Lot of the funny stuff would probably be funnier. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, all the stuff with Kate learning and, like, the Imagine Dragons joke where the tracksuits are so dumb that in the middle of an interrogation or a fight, they're still going to follow up about their concert with their girlfriend. Like, all of that stuff, I think, would be... And all the trick arrows and how it shuts down the tracksuits and... All of that would probably work better if Kingpin wasn't the backdrop. If it's just like, hey, these are these annoying people that are keeping me from going home for Christmas. And this annoying girl, Kate, is like, won't give this up. And and then like, then the escalation could be Yelena. And like that showdown kind of being the pinnacle of it, of the stress. But not that there's another thing to follow up and then with like Kingpin needs to be taken care of. You know, like that. Even if Eleanor had been behind the whole thing, but she had just consulted someone who hired the tracksuits, like that she didn't know Kingpin, or maybe she had never interfaced with Kingpin directly, and she had just been working via a third party, like a Wesley type, or, you know, I don't know, something.
Yeah,
I'm with you. I think actually the whole show, all the goofiness would have fit even better. We would have been like, oh, this is a fun Christmas thing, kind of like Guardians.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think you're right. There are too many elements here to shoehorn in a character like Kingpin, where it's like, I feel like what we should have gotten, to me, it's the equivalent of like at the end of the Avengers, right as they're like getting ready to take on Loki, Thanos shows up and is like, but I was really behind it all. And it's like, yes, we do find out Thanos was behind it and you get that great tease at the end of the Avengers. But because you just get a tease, it's like, oh gosh, who is this guy? What does that mean? Like, instead of it being this, like, it diminishes with proximity where it's like, I want to know, like, I want a scene where someone's like having to go tell Kingpin that the whole tracksuit mafia has been taken down and whatever the consequences of that are.
And then he could
have
been like, oh, those lowlifes, they're such losers anyways, you know, or something.
Yeah. Something where it's like, okay, like, I mean, like, I guess if I have to get involved, you know, like but something where it's like,
this is beneath him. Yes.
Yes.
I agree. Wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah. And again, we've talked about that, but I think in terms of actual execution, the only other thing I would say, if you were going to do it, is I kind of wonder, and I get that this sets up Echo directly, but it's also the scene with her and him in the alleyway, I think, is great, but it's just like I think even then we knew he wasn't dead, because why would you introduce a character like that and kill him off? And now we definitely know. But it's like that thing where, okay, but you are kind of trying to make us believe he could be. Like, that is the purpose of the scene. And
don't waste my time.
Yeah. Like, I don't believe it. And to the extent I would believe it, that would be really unsatisfying to me. Like, I would almost rather them just go in to find him and
he shouldn't have been in the show. He shouldn't have been in the show.
I think that's right.
Because then also Maya, when she fights Kazi, could just be like, man, you know, he's going to come for you. And that's the end. And you don't actually see a confrontation.
Yeah.
Where she has,
and
like,
then you don't even know who he is until you then get some kind of teaser.
Okay. 100%. Yeah. It's been years now. We get it. 100%. We're in total lockstep. I don't think at this point anyone of our listeners are changing their minds on that. You either love it or you just are like us and you don't. But
I am glad that I think that you and I are also on the same page in that, just stepping back again.
Can I say one more negative thing though? Real quick.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
The other two things I just totally don't understand the call is the LARPers and Jack as the swordsman. Obviously the whole point of Jack is to literally be the embodiment of a red herring. The whole point is that the whole show, Kate thinks it's Jack, and then ultimately it's actually her mother, and that's the big twist.
Yeah.
But I just don't know why they lean so heavily into making him so weird and so goofy and like that he also is a swordsman. And then at the end, he doesn't actually, he's just an idiot and doesn't know what's going on, but he can actually use a sword. And like how he has the butterscotch Armand Duquesne butterscotch candies. And like, they're just constantly trying to throw you off, and Jack was framed and blah, blah. And then it kind of turns out he actually is an idiot and but he's a good sword fighter and he was framed. I just don't think it works for
leisure activity.
Exactly. And like the fact that he is so weird makes it hard for me to believe that like they're super in love, just because like Kate's mother seems like socially she's pretty normal and Jack socially is super strange. I think it's just like, it's almost like Ralph from WandaVision, where I'm left feeling like, did we need to go through all of that just to get a different twist and ultimately be like, oh, he's a nobody and just a weirdo. Yeah. And then with the LARPers, like, I think when Clint first has to go there, it's kind of funny. Okay, I can buy that. It's Christmas. If Kingpin's not the main villain, then it's kind of just a fun, like, Clint's annoyed that this is his Christmas vacation. Kind of like the musical, right? Like that kind of Clint. But then to actually have them come back and help, okay, maybe I can get there. But then for them to actually get into costume, like if they just stayed in their normal attire as like cops and they were helping and it's not funny, they're not like body slamming people, then it's like, okay, that's fine. They called on some help from their friends and they're doing what they're paid to do, which is be firefighters and cops and stuff. But to actually get in the costume, play the silly music a la Loki episode 4 of season 1, play that kind of music, body slam someone, hit someone with a pole, then it's like you're making the tracksuits look so stupid that there's no way Kingpin would be working with these clowns.
Yeah. Unless he's also stupid.
So.
Which is, yeah. No, I'm glad you said that, because that, I do think, and again, I'm about to transition here because I had a really, really great rewatch of the show, and there are a lot of things that I loved.
We're already getting comments of now we're too harsh on the show. When, you know, if we don't, we'll get comments and reviews that say we don't critique anything. So
right, I know. But I think that one thing that I think
we're
you're
just,
right.
We're and, just doing it for the free screeners. We don't want to mess up our relationship with Disney. So how dare we say
Disney,
anything?
Please, we know.
Don't cancel us.
You only send things to people that love you. That's why
they're
all
so
of the
obsessed with our podcast that all they're doing is listening to every episode we ever put out, going like, oh, they said something negative about Kingpin.
They
cut
have like
all
a
of
naughty,
their
nice
access.
List.
Get rid of it.
I do think, and you know, it's kind of funny talking about the are we critiquing enough or not conversation.
Oh gosh.
Thinking back to No Way Home and what we talked about there, I do think that one takeaway from really all the post Endgame in MCU stuff, or post Far From Home, technically, I guess.
Not in our order.
I think something that you have to acknowledge is a lack of the word quality control, I think, is kind of loaded.
Please stop saying that.
I think more it's like one thing that for a, and again, this is important to note, but for a very specific slice of the MCU, like the tail end of phase 2 and phase 3, for the most part, not entirely, but for the most part, there was this crazy ability that Marvel had to like really figure out what the core product was, like what was going to make this movie work and what was the exact right cut and what was the thing that was a little too much. And sometimes you watch deleted scenes, like from Endgame even, where I'm like, wow, I'm really glad that was cut, because it wouldn't have been a disaster.
Sure.
But it wouldn't have added, and it would have detracted a little bit. And I think that those calls are not being made as much now.
Well, maybe they are now again. But is coming out, maybe not.
Yeah.
Like the book talks about, right? There's a little bit of an overextension that physically Kevin was not even able to go through those kind of details.
there's no reason to get into, to get too far into that. But I bring that up with Hawkeye here because
it's part of that era.
And it's a great example of, and this is why I find myself defending certain phase 4 and 5 projects so vigorously. It's not because I'm blind to any flaws. It's that the fact that there are flaws does not eliminate the fact that there are also some things that are really great, because both can exist. Like, I think that that's the difference between something like this and something like Black Adam, or these movies where it's like, wow, there is just really like, there's nothing here that I'm latching onto. Like, I think that the reason why we have to have a complicated conversation about something like Eternals is like, yeah, I think Eternals, there are some things it does badly, but there are also some things it does like really well, like holy cow. And then same here, where it's like, we just talked about the things where I'm like, I wish somebody had said, hey, this is a fun comic shout out with the Swordsman. Probably not the time. Like, let's keep that on the shelf.
Yeah.
Let's hope that maybe we have a chance to revisit that down the line. And then like, same with Kingpin, just recognize like, because if you stand back and look at it, we've got the Tracksuit Mafia, we've got Clint dealing with the fallout from Natasha and also trying to protect his family and his family Christmas. We've got the whole introduction of Kate as a character. We've got Yelena showing up as a character. We've got Maya showing up as a character. And this is all in 6 episodes.
Jack, the boyfriend, who's not a swordsman. Maybe like you're, Kate's guessing if he's involved, but the twist ultimately being not that he actually can wield the sword and help fight at the end. Totally with you. Like, don't get that in there.
It's just, I think someone needed to act some more things, but it's like, yeah, I think that said,
I think where you're mainly right too, by the way, is I just told you I was back in Michigan this last weekend hanging with friends. It was basically a friends weekend for like 4 or 5 of us. It was awesome. But I was around those people, guys that used to love Marvel, don't really follow it a ton anymore. And I was talking about that. And I think where you're right is I realized like in a situation where I'm with 4 other guys my age that are not diehard Marvel fans at all.
Mm-hmm.
My gut, your gut kind of decides for you basically, which is like in that quick moment, what can I defend since Endgame where I go like, you really need to see this though. Like, oh, you think Marvel stinks, but just like, wait till you watch this. And I found myself saying that. I said that with Loki season 2. I was like, have you seen Loki season 2?
Yeah. Yeah.
But any other time I had that conversation where I'm with you and where I'm with the person who says we're not critical enough is like, I have to give a little bit of a hesitation of who I'm talking to for almost every other project, maybe besides WandaVision, Loki season 2, and No Way Home, where I have to go like, Guardians 3 was really great, but I have to like kind of read the room where I'm like, is my mom going to love Guardians 3? No. Like, I have to say it's a little bit weird with all the creature stuff and, or like, you could watch Quantumania. I thought it was really fun, but some people didn't like it. And there's some visual that like, you have to almost get, like, I didn't know what to throw out.
Yeah.
Like I said, my brother walked in during the Hawkeye finale and it was like, why is this so silly? And that hurt me to my core, like still to this day, because he's a casual, right? He's not a fan at all, really, I guess you should say. And I'm now like what you said, kind of with Quantumania, like watching through that lens, I'm like, yeah, why is it so silly? Like, dang it.
Yeah.
So anyways, my point in saying all that is like, I think you're right that there is a little bit of looseness in some of those phase 4 projects that I think they're now correcting a little bit. Like, in some ways, I don't have the same kinds of issues at all with the Marvels. Like, the kinds of issues.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, wow. Let's close this episode with a few things that this show kills.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I really do. Like, it's not stuff that we have to go into the nitty-gritty about and be here all day, but there are a couple of kind of broad things. Like, what's funny is we've talked about the finale a lot at the time. We've talked about it a lot when we reflect on the show. But the first 5 episodes of this show are like, I have almost no issue with. Like, I'm not saying that it's like scene for scene perfect, but even what you're like, even with all the pieces that are moving around, I think you're right. Like, even the swordsman stuff, if it ended with like, oh, he was just a patsy, just a red herring, and we didn't get the some of the stuff in the finale. And I feel like that about a lot of stuff. I actually still think it's fun. Like it, and it works and it fits the tone. And so it's like, I thought Tony Dalton was really funny this time around. I thought that the LARPing thing, this was kind of the first time where I'm still like, I don't know that I needed it in a show where you only have six episodes and you're doing so much. But I was like, you know what? It is kind of fun to see Clint like do like as someone that is like one of the best fighters in the world, like within this fictional universe, like go and have like a LARPing match. Like that is an inherently funny idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. It's like all these little things just execution wise, I thought worked. But and Pete, our manager, said this to us.
Yes.
But also I just was getting to the end of
Pete likes it, the show.
Well, and I was getting to the end of episode five and I was like, man, I've had a great time with this, especially around Christmas. Like it's just a fun, like kind of what I want a Marvel Christmas thing.
And
to
I think
like.
There are things in the finale that are still fun. Like there's only a few shots that I'm really talking about and the idea that Kingpin's in it. Don't hate me. Don't hate me. I said I would knock into this. I just got to say one last thing. I swear. I am everything we've talked about for 2 years, right? I am just really stoked. No matter what you thought about any of these projects, I am really, really stoked to get the COVID overextension era over. Like, isn't that, like, I actually got chills thinking about how much that fires me up. To get into the new year where now, like, Marvel has regrouped. I think they've regrouped well with, like, Guardians 3, mm-hmm. Loki Season 2, and the Marvels. I think they have. And they now have mm-hmm. so much time, because next year there's not that much content. They have time to totally collect their thoughts. They've launched this spotlight thing, right? This Marvel spotlight. And then I think, like, hopefully the Jonathan Majors thing gets behind us. Like, I am really stoked about what it can look like again for them mm-hmm. to be back to less projects, more focused. There's no longer COVID budgets. There's no longer COVID messing up your schedule. Like, the next few years could be legitimately really special. Like, Spider-Man 4, I saw rumors for that. I have chills right now. Mm-hmm. Like, the Daredevil, Spider-Man 4, Fantastic Four, Secret Wars, Kang Dynasty. There are like some legitimate like show-stopping things if they kind of take this entire era and learn. Like if, let me say this. If this was the bottom, I'm super stoked because this is not even that bad. But if this was the bottom, this era, I am just like beyond not excited. Hawkeye. No. This whole era.
Right.
I'm beyond excited to leave it and grow together. You know, like build things back up again.
Yeah.
I'm so stoked about what the cultural moment could be again. So that's my last caveat. Like
no,
the fire is not gone from me.
No. And one thing that I want to say, just if you're bringing that up, and
I know, I'm sorry. Change golly.
No. I'm not going to change the subject entirely. I just, because, you know, the MCU has spanned like coming up on two decades. I guess depending on how you look at it, it's spanned three, but I think there's this weird thing that happens sometimes where you're like rooting for corporations. And we talked about this a little bit, like the way that we look at things like from like a sports framework almost with entertainment. And I think like something that struck me the other day that this had not dawned on me in this way, but I think as like a longtime Marvel fan and comics fan, like as someone that's been really into Marvel since way before the MCU existed, I think that there's this weirdness with like, but what if Marvel isn't the biggest thing anymore? Like, what if that isn't the like dominating force in Hollywood? And does that mean like on the one hand that Marvel's failed, you know, or like if they do kind of retain their spot or reascend or however you want to look at it, like does that mean that like that we have truly lost the independent film or like whatever all these conversations are? And I think it struck me, Marvel being good and like each project being great has kind of nothing to do, I think, with how significant it is culturally, like on like a constant basis. And I'm not going to do the whole like phase three comparison thing because we've done that to death. But I just mean, like, there are so many other things, like so many other shows that people follow that are critically acclaimed and have enough of a following to where they are still made and make a lot of money and are deemed successful that are not dominating the cultural conversation ever. Like so many shows, so many movies, so many like eight. It's like the other thing is like when an A24 movie comes out, right? Like some don't get good reviews and you kind of just don't hear about it. You hear about the ones that everyone's now talking about that suddenly like are Oscar contenders. But if one doesn't work, no one's like, has A24 lost their edge? It's like, that was a movie made by a film studio and this one didn't work. And like, then you kind of move on to the next one. And there's a part of me that's almost like not even clamoring for Marvel to be like King of the Hill anymore. Cause I just, is that really the point? Like I know for Marvel,
I want them to sneak up on it. That's what I want. I want it to like, I'm excited for an under the radar. Yes.
I think because it's just kind of more like it's more fun to be following it because you're a fan. And it's like there's this strange thing that happens where once it reaches a certain saturation level, then now there's like you've got it's in the consciousness, but it's the type of storytelling that a lot of people just aren't going to be into as much because they may not like superhero things, but they feel like they're being force fed it because it's so big. So they kind of have to complain about it. And then you have to engage with it. And it's like, I don't want you to feel like you're force fed anything either, but that doesn't mean that I can't still enjoy it. I'm just over here enjoying this thing that I've always enjoyed.
Right.
And so
it feels like the Arcade Fire equivalent a little bit. Remember, it's like,
yes, yeah.
It was so cool to like Arcade Fire for all my indie friends. And then they won a Grammy and the topic became like, oh, they've sold out. Like now it's not cool anymore because they're on top. And then it just became like a thing where like you had to almost argue about it. Okay, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'm with you 100%. Anyway, so- I'm with you 100%. Okay, to wrap this show, I think it's easy. Kate, Clint, and Yelena, and Maya. Those four make the show for me. The chemistry between Kate and Clint, I think is really well done. Like, I would say I was more impressed with that, Jeremy Renner and Haley Steinfeld, than I ever thought I was going to be. Like, Jeremy Renner's better here than you thought he, like, than Candace thinks, right? Like, this was way better.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed...
He plays the old man Hawkeye thing like well, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I thought, and honestly, like whenever I talk about there being certain things that were not adapted well, one thing that I thought he does really well in this is straddling the version of the character that Matt Fraction writes in the Hawkeye series, which is dramatically different from the version of Clint that we have established in the MCU.
Right.
He's like a single womanizer kind of like, yeah. And I thought he kind of straddles those well, where because he's sort of just with Kate the entire time, you get this sense of like, oh, this is what it is like to see Hawkeye operate kind of solo. So you get a taste of that. But then you get like it's all kind of fueled by the MCU family connections that sort of set that character aside. And just the way the Renner plays that, I'm with you. I was really struck by a lot of nuances in his performance.
Love what Kate brought. I love the interaction between Kate and Yelena. And I love what Maya brought. Like on this watch, like, I think I used to just throw like Maya, Kazi, the tracksuits kind of into one category. And on this watch, I realized like, no, I think she's better than almost everyone else in her track, not just on screen, but also like the actual character obviously is elevated. She's stronger than those characters, but also as an actress, I think she's better than some of the people. And so like, I think it's the right call to lean into her character of all the characters to choose. So I'm excited for that show.
Which is so crazy to say, because wasn't this like the first thing she ever acted
in? Yes, but like I like the play on Clint being hard of hearing and her being deaf and all the sign language stuff and like how they lean into that for Clint, giving us the really emotional moment with Clint and Kate relaying Nathaniel's message to Clint via writing. Yeah. Like those four, I think for me, more than any dynamic with Kate and her family, more than any dynamic with Jack, more than anything from Kingpin or the tracksuits, for me, I can almost sum up like all the ideas around those four are a huge win for me, and I find it very enjoyable.
I can kind of actually run through my, last four notes here, because they all kind of fit, or at least the first three fit, and then the last one I think will make you happy. But the first thing that I had written from my last rewatch that I kind of underlined here is, I kind of have to apologize to you. Recognize that I think
I'll take
you were right. Oh. You were more right on this than I was.
Oh, stop.
When we first got the screeners for Hawkeye, you were just like so stoked on Kate Bishop as a character. And I was like, yeah, I think it's really great, but I wasn't like blown away. But the last two times, I'm so turned around now to the point where I would say, I kind of think Hailee Steinfeld is one of the strongest addition to the MCU from an acting perspective in this new era, period.
And or Iman Vellani, which was what's so cool about that final scene. That's what's so cool about that final sequence. Yeah. Like, I bought the chemistry immediately between the two of those characters.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I know that's the only reason I was waffling. And the funny thing about that is I had that thought while I was watching, and it also made me think like, man, well, like given the connections between other characters that we know are, I guess, going to be in or would probably be in a Young Avengers project, Christoph Beck is the clear front runner to score that project, right?
Because I was sitting here listening, Beck taking that the very first shot in this show when Hawkeye is jumping off the building. It's the famous Avengers shot, but I didn't realize like he swells to the like Avengers theme, I thought, but it's the Hawkeye theme, which is super dope. Yeah. It sounds similar for a second.
And we've talked about him doing this so well.
Yeah.
But he also like, I loved the way, not just that he worked in the Yelena theme,
but
the way that he at the very end, like almost combines it with the Hawkeye theme in that like in the scene where they're on the ice. And it's like, so it's like, I think that he's just so good at doing that in a way that feels natural and not forced. And if we do have like Cassie showing up, I just, you know, he's the guy, I think.
100%. The line of, you got to spend so much time with her is such a good line to me.
Yeah.
When says that when she breaks down and then that's the follow-up. Like, I'm so thankful that wasn't like, it's not fair or...
Yeah.
There are other options for that kind of bombshell. But when she, after hearing all the news, realizes what he's saying is true, for her to say, you got to spend so much time with her, implying it's not fair, I thought was so perfect.
Yeah. No, I agree. Well, and that's like, I think maybe my big picture takeaway here, and I just don't think I realized this in the moment, if this is the last time we ever get Jeremy Renner in the MCU.
Or Rimmer.
I mean, as far as I know, Rimmer is not confirmed for any other projects.
He's out.
But I think, like, if we're just saying this is more maybe the last time we're getting Clint Barton, like, as something that's being adapted from, you know, decades of comics, this was a really great, like, a finale for the character in that sense. Like, we have the Ronin stuff, like, really dealt with, like, in a way that I thought it wasn't as much an Endgame. The fact that, like, in the comics, Maya becomes Ronin for a while. Oh. So I love the, like, Maya-Ronin, like, showdown and the way that that is really natural. But then also, like, a scene that really stuck out to me this time that I don't think connected as much initially is when she's talking about why she is so focused on Hawkeye and why he's always been her hero.
Yes.
And talking about how, like, because you didn't have superpowers and I was so scared and I realized, like, I didn't have to wait for the universe to bestow powers on me. I could just be brave enough to do the right thing. And it's like, yeah, this is kind of what makes this character this character. And because of the way that he was introduced and the way that, like, we barely even really get a ton of Clint time in the first Avengers, and then he never has a solo project until now and isn't in Infinity War.
Yep.
It's like, I don't know that that's ever been articulated. Like, even to the extent that, like, Nat's role has been articulated.
It feels so similar to me. Like, the conversation is the exact same that we had with Thor that I feel like we could have with Wanda, that we had with Loki, which is like, are there more stories you could tell for any of those characters? Yeah. Like, there's a world where 3 years from now, we're like, gosh, I can't imagine Clint's character without this follow-up project. Yes.
Right.
But could they also just end it here and it'd be satisfactory? I think so. Like, Clint finally, after all this, gets closure on Ronan, gets closure on Natasha and her sister, and goes home to his family and spends his life with his family, raising his kids. And it's like, if Wanda is dead, I would be so sad. But really, she sacrificed after reacting and has nothing left. And she saved the world by what she did. Like, that could be the end of her story. Just like I felt with Thor at the end of Love and Thunder. Like, that could be it. They really have mastered this ability to leave the door open while still closed, basically.
Well, and I think it's like the kind of 1-2 punch in 2021, although I really like how we have it in our watch order, but like of Black Widow and then this, and just kind of showing,
honestly, even Spider-Man. Like, yes, there's millions more stories you could tell, and I want those.
Oh, right.
I'm not saying that, but I'm saying, like, if that was the end, it'd be a perfect ending. That now you just know there's an anonymous guy helping out people in New York for eternity now.
I think I just really appreciate how much this show and Black Widow were kind of both not just giving us more time with these characters that had been kind of underserved in some of the group films, but also I think
Black Widow rules,
like, just like it, expanding on their own personal stories and connecting some dots. Like, at this point, I actually like the fact that we get the connection that his wife was a SHIELD agent, because, like, that makes sense. Like, how else would he have, like, met and married somebody without it being this kind of weird, Mr. and Mrs. Smith thing? Like, I kind of appreciate that. And I appreciate, like, that's why SHIELD was probably able to get her off the grid in the way that they were. Like, so that all adds up. But I think the biggest thing for me that I think that the show does really, really deftly is, for all of the elements that I think are in this, and even given that there are some that are probably not necessary, the way it balances adding in Kate as a character in the project where it's also dealing with him losing Nat, that's really, really, I think, just exquisitely done. Because, like, there's the one scene that we've talked about before where he sees her falling and he like flashes back to Endgame and sees Nat falling. But it goes all the way through where it's like, okay, I kind of buy the cranky old man Hawkeye early on, not just because he's like, oh, I don't have time for this, I'm trying to get back to my family, but because he's also like, I'm just not even really in a position right now in life where I can even be open to a relationship like this, where I'm going to work with someone that reminds me so much of this person that I worked with for so long that I've lost, that, like, the whole world keeps reminding me that I've lost. And so it's like that, and him, like, clearly trying to deal with that. He's not trying to be a jerk, but he kind of is. And then it's like those moments of her explaining to him what she means to him and what his role is. And then him having that moment with Yelena that you talked about. It's like, yeah, wow, that's a really perfect story for Hawkeye. That, like, like if the goal of a project within the Marvel world is like find the right story for the right character at the right time, like this is an example of that, I think. Like, so to your point about like Clint and Kate and Maya, like that stuff working really well. Yeah, like absolutely. And it's like it works well within the MCU. There are so many comics things that are coming together and getting nice shout outs. I just think like as much as we nitpicked other things in this show, I think if you stand back and look at it, like I think the headline is that this was a really successful Hawkeye show.
I totally agree. There are things I would change. That's so many right. of the tier two and tier three shows and movies for me. They're not perfect. There are things that could have been tangibly tweaked. Mm-hmm. And I think the result would have been better. But it's still enjoyable. And the core of it, like you just said, totally agree.
Can I ask one?
Okay, go ahead. I have one final point, tiny, but you go ahead first.
Well, that's great because mine is a legitimate question. And this is one that I feel like if you can't answer, someone can and will. Did we ever get clarity on the connection between the Black Widow credit scene and Yelena being hired here?
Eleanor.
Okay, but so do people just hire Yelena through Val? That's the connect?
It's possible. I mean, there are so many headcanon things you could do there. It's possible.
I don't think it's like a plot hole. I'm just legitimately,
I don't know,
curious if there's like an understanding. And then timeline wise, is that supposed to be like a while before Hawkeye? Or I guess I should look in the MCU timeline book that I have in my closet. But I didn't know what your thought process was.
Well, there are so many. Again, there are different ways you could approach that. Maybe she called Val and that's how they got Yelena. Maybe it's separate things. Maybe Val wanted Yelena to kill Hawkeye. And then when she was in New York anyways, Eleanor has another angle to get a hold of her. Or maybe via Kingpin they get a hold of her. No. Let me back up. Not that one, because Yelena is surprised to see Kingpin.
True.
But there are ways they could have gotten a hold of her, I think.
I'm more curious, not because I feel like it was anything that wasn't answered, but more just because I'm always trying to figure out, like,
maybe that's what confirmed Val, it for her. Like maybe Yelena doesn't know who this guy is. Then Val shows the picture and she's like, gosh, I feel like, yeah, maybe Val's right. I hate this person, but I'm not going to do anything about it yet. Maybe. And then she gets a call.
Yeah.
She gets a call later. That's like, hey, can you come kill this guy? And she's like, oh yeah, I do hate that guy. I don't know.
Yeah. Which is another thing for me where I'm always like, man, do you think, like, does she truly think that Clint?
That,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, we don't have time. That is one of the parts that I don't buy as fully. Like maybe not 100%. I buy it like 80%. Is right. The whole that, like Yelena, if she had not missed her shot, would have actually killed Barton on a misunderstanding. Like you're so smart with everything right. else, you couldn't vet that part out a little bit, I think that.
Right.
But that's why I like them including that line of you had so much time with her, because then it comes off as more like her heart is trumping her head. Like she knows Clint's telling the truth.
She's just angry.
But she's angry.
Yeah. Well, and I will say like the headcanon there could be like, yeah, everyone else treats Clint as a hero, but I think Yelena is probably one of the only people that knows he was Ronin. You know, because like the photo that Val shows, sure. he's wearing the Ronin suit, sure. I think. So she would say like, well, there are a lot of things that people don't know about Hawkeye. So maybe he isn't the hero that everyone...
I don't think that plot point is the single best part of the show, though.
Sure. I think it's just a way of getting that kind of
sure
like that moment for Clint and Yelena, which I do think we needed in some way.
My final thing, and this has nothing to do with the big picture, small picture. You're talking about Miss Marvel and Kate and the Young Avengers and Christoph Beck scoring it. That's a perfect example now, though, where I desperately need Spider-Man to interact with like a young Avengers type team and be the adult in the room. Like, that's where I want to see the change now. Like, that was Spider-Man. Now you're 25 or whatever. And I want you to swing in and be like, you know, all the entire tone needs to be more that you're the seasoned vet, a la the PlayStation video game. That like all the banter needs to be you're confident in yourself. Like, you now know who you are as Spider-Man. You know your abilities. You know what you can accomplish. And it's not a second guessing. That's the version of Spider-Man I want to then see interact with these people that are just figuring it out. Does that make sense? Like, now the roles are flipped. He needs to be the adult from now on.
Which is funny because he still is younger than Kate and is like probably the same, a little bit older than.
She's 23 now is what she says. She's 23. Hold on. What's the math of this? He was just trying to get into, he's probably 20.
Well, because if these came out at the same time, or like, because if I think these are supposed to take place at the same time, right? Like,
which he's 18, right? Because he's trying to go to college.
Yeah, 17 or 18, I guess. And she is, I think, 22.
Okay, you're right. Hawkeye. You're right. My point still applies as far as the superhero veteranness.
Well, and I think your point applies in that this will be a chance for, you know, it's like in Spider-Man 2, whenever he's unmasked, and which is the funny thing there is like Tobey Maguire never looked like he was in
correct.
High school,
yeah, correct.
But they're like, oh my gosh, he's just a kid. And it's like, that's it's clearly like, a grown man.
Yeah, it's clearly a 36-year-old or whatever it is. Yeah, right.
He's no older than my son.
Yeah. Like, how old is your son? I know.
But it's like, because you look the same age as Tobey Maguire.
Tom has the opposite problem. Do you know the time in real life is 27?
Yeah.
But he's like successfully playing a 17-year-old. Successfully.
Yeah. Well, and when he was cast, you know, like the character aged a ton since he was cast, you know.
But even now,
Of the blip. But
when he shows back up on camera again, in real life, he'll probably be 29 or 30. And Spider-Man in the MCU will probably be at that point 21 or 22. And I guess all I'm saying is like his vibe needs to be different at that point.
Well, and to your point, I think that's what I like though, is like if truly nobody knows who Spider-Man is, which is when I think the character's at its best, then he's going to kind of want to give off the impression that he's not a kid. Right. You know, it's like, that's even something that I love from
how fun is that going to be? That's like that meme of that lady. Praise him, yes. Can you, I mean like, dude. Like he swings in and they're like, there's this guy that looks like a spider swinging around town. We don't know what he's doing or who he is. He just comes in and out and then we can't catch him. Like that sounds so fun to me now. All of a sudden. I know.
And because he actually like.
Or like Daredevil and Kingpin being like, oh, if we could just get rid of the spider in town, you know? I'm so excited. Sorry. I'm sorry.
I'm so excited to see.
Merry Christmas, y'all.
What his Daredevil interactions look like, by the way, talking about the Kingpin stuff.
We're about to see
such a funny like head or canon element.
That thank you for saying that. That's the perfect place to leave it because we are on the doorstep of now seeing Echo and Kingpin, in which case Daredevil is making a confirmed appearance. So
true,
the very next project,
in the red suit.
Yeah, outside of What If. That you're going to hear us talk about on this podcast. When we come back from Christmas, which we're taking a break next week, when we come back for Christmas, we're talking What If, and then we're right away diving into Echo. And Echo is going to have Kingpin and Daredevil and Echo in it. And then there are now rumors of appearances between all of these characters. I don't know if you saw this, but like Ant-Man was trending yesterday because there's rumors that Ant-Man's going to be in Spider-Man 4 with Daredevil. I think Daniel RPK, that Twitter account, has like that the current script of Spider-Man 4 includes Daredevil and maybe Ant-Man now.
That's crazy.
Anyways, I don't even know how I feel about that, but my point is like it's all coming together on the street level side of things. So
yeah, I feel like
time to be
that would be such a Ant-Man would be a strange inclusion in that.
Well, maybe it's a cameo. Maybe he's not in it.
That's true. I mean, maybe it's like Valkyrie being in the Marvels.
All that matters is, spoiler alert, all that matters is Daredevil and Spider-Man in the same universe coming soon. Coming to a theater near you. Merry Christmas. That's a Christmas gift for you right
yes.
there.
Yeah. Which, I mean, you say that after, you know, aside from What If, but we do have What If coming now, I guess, really. Like the I'm trying to think when this episode is hitting people's feeds.
This episode's hitting people's feeds Monday, December 18. The first episode of What If is December 22, which I think then would be a Thursday, yeah. if I'm doing my math right. Friday. One episode a day, all while you and I are on Christmas break, but January 1 on this podcast, breaking down all of the episodes of What If right here. Just kind of talking about it from a high level.
And I am going to try to watch daily, I think, just to kind of get in that rhythm. Too. It sounds fun.
Yeah. And just like maybe on Discord or social media, put out a little blurb or something.
Yeah.
Then Echo, which we are breaking into three parts, I think, officially. So episodes 1 and 2, mm-hmm. 3 and 4, and then episode 5, the finale. Guys, we hope you have just an awesome Christmas break. I always think it's fun to go back to Michigan just for 1 week and get some snow, actually, and just enjoy Christmas. So this is the close of another chapter / another year for us, another year in the books. As humans and on this podcast. So thank you so much for listening. I cannot wait to grow this together right back here on Friends from Work in 2024. We'll see you back here. Thanks, guys.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.